Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Blathering Conversations. Ken Napsok, thank you, everyone who's been following me on this journey as I return to interviews. I stumbled over that because I don't want to highlight my laziness. It'd be much easier for me just to sit at home and play video games than making sure I sit down with really cool people. But I'm very proud of myself that we are now 5 weeks into me being back and interviewing folks, and we got a great one today. He's here right now. You see him on screen, so I don't want him just to sit there awkwardly. A few years ago, I was going out to New York with Mark Ellis, and he said, yeah, I added Kyle Lewis to the show. I don't know if you know him. And I was like, I don't know who Kyle Lewis is. And I'm glad I've had the chance to meet this man. He's talented, funny, insightful, poignant. I think he does important comedy work while also just being damn entertaining. So everyone, please welcome. There's no live audience. There's no clapping. Kyle Lewis, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. What's going on, everybody? I feel like we're doing the WWF face-to-face from back in the day right now, where you have to go to Madison Square Garden, where it's Razor Ramon on one screen and Blink on the other.
Yeah.
It's like Rico, all that stuff.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Razor.
I used to love that stuff.
I do. I kind of miss promoting the house shows. And you go to Poughkeepsie this week, where you're going to see Tito Santana versus the Mountie.
Did you get?
Yeah.
Because you're not from New York originally,
no,
right?
No.
Are you? Yeah. Did you get different dates or did you get Poughkeepsie?
I just know Poughkeepsie's a great comedy reference, you know?
Yeah. But, no, that's fair. No, because I always wonder because like which ones did you get? Because we always got Madison Square Garden and the
sure.
Coliseum. Like, did you guys get California ones and not Madison Square Garden?
Yeah, no, definitely like LA the Sports Coliseum, well, I was going to say the Pond, but that was a little bit late in the game. Well, mid-90s, the Pond. Yeah, but yes, it was definitely regional. Definitely regional.
Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's so many different promos out there then.
Just imagine the workload. Imagine the workload of these wrestlers. This is going to be a lot of fun. I want to highlight up top, too. Thanks for those who have supported and checked out my comedy album, In My Day, live at the Harrison Pub in London, available on Bandcamp, special edition available there, and it's on Apple, Spotify, everywhere else. Thanks for the support. And a new endeavor is on its way. Some music. That's right. I co-wrote some songs with a band called the Moonagers that, well, we started. Me, Brian Taylor, Sean Arnold, got some songs on the way coming out November 3rd, our first single. And it's weird to say, it's a fun little passion project. Put a lot of energy into it. So look for that link in description, all that good stuff down below. But Kyle, let's get into the business here. You went right where I wanted to start with you. I don't plan these interviews out, but wrestling and comedy, they seem to go hand in hand. I know a lot of wrestling fans who are comics. I know a lot of comedy fans who are wrestlers. And there's a lot of crossover. Where did all that begin for you? What came first in your life? The love of comedy, the love of wrestling?
I would say the love of wrestling. The first thing I ever saw was WrestleMania 8, Hulk Hogan getting saved by the Ultimate Warrior. Sid Justice, Papa Shango, that whole thing. Poor Papa Shango, by the way.
Shango blowing his spot. Yeah.
Blowing his spot. If you look back at it, I think I watched like a What Culture video. Mm-hmm. And like you can see the look on his face where he's just like, oh, I know I fucked up. It's so funny.
The absolute biggest moment of his career up until that point. I mean, he was great in global as Soul Taker. I remember rooting for him there. So that's the WrestleMania 8, which, you know what, in terms of WrestleManias, I think that one's overlooked. I'm not going to call that underrated in the grand scheme of WrestleManias, but I have fond memories of that one. Flair and Macho.
Yeah, they have some a really big matches that stand out. There's Flair and Savage. There's Brett Piper. Depending on how you feel about Hogan and Sid and all that stuff, there's that one too.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels, it's like the coming out party for Shawn Michaels, right? Undertaker, and Bret Hart. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Taker and was it Taker and Jake that year? Or was that seven?
Yes. Taker and Jake, Michaels and Santana. Like
it's good stuff. Yeah, that Piper. I'm a Bret Hart, Bulldog, Piper, Michaels too. But those are my three guys from that era that I looked up to then, and then look back and enjoy their work and their influences in other creative things I've done. What part drew you into wrestling first? The promos, the comedy, the action, all of it above?
Literally just running, this man running in underwear and tassels to the heaviest rock song I've ever heard in my life. Because I don't know how I knew this as a kid, but before I even saw WWF, at least my first memory of WWE, I knew who Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior were. I don't know why I knew who they were, but I knew who they were. And then my brother, we were watching it. Let's just say, through dishonorable means, we were able to watch the show. But I was like, I was a kid running around all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then he called me into the room. He's like, "They're jumping Hulk Hogan." Now I don't know who these two guys are. And then Bobby Heenan says the iconic line, "He doesn't have a friend left." And then you hear the Ultimate Warrior, da, 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 and he makes that long sprint.
The longest sprint. All,
yeah. For the non-wrestling fans, it's like the Avengers Assemble scene in Endgame. The person you need to come through comes through, saves Hulk Hogan, and then these two guys are celebrating to end the show. And now we don't talk about them with such reverence anymore. But back then, it was amazing.
Yeah, it's a weird almost sliding scale of there's a slight chance there's more reverence for Hellwig, Ultimate Warrior, than Hogan. I think it's a push, but it's weird how things have even changed over the last few years. But that's a seminal moment, and you're right, that speaks to putting the real people aside for a second. Just the character of the Ultimate Warrior, derided, you know. I get it, he wasn't the best wrestler, but that was part of the appeal. He was larger than life. That's what Vince wanted.
He was very larger than life, and that's when he was smaller. I never saw the bigger warrior. I only saw that guy. So when people are like, "He's smaller, he's a different guy," I'm like, "What are you talking about? That's the only warrior I know."
Oh, you see, did you feel the full impact of the Ultimate Warrior is dead and this is a new guy?
I didn't feel it then. I did have years later, when I was working at a different job, my boss at the time tried to tell me that there were two warriors. And then there was like a different Kane. And, you know, as a wrestling fan, you hear this like a million times. I'm like, "It's not true." And he got mad at me. He was like, "It's two warriors. I saw it." I was like, "Okay, I'll go get the boxes." I'm like, "Okay, fine."
That's like it's
two Ultimate Warriors.
A fight I had in the summer of 1999 with one of my coworkers was telling me about the documentary called Blair Witch coming out. And I was like, it's not real, man. It's a movie. And he's like, "No." No, people forget the cultural impact of that movie. It was a legit argument this guy was having with me. So, Warrior.
I love when people get worked, like just get worked about things. And they think there's, especially when they're like, "Wrestling's fake." And then they get like worked over something that happens in UFC or the Blair Witch Project or something like that. And they think they're smarter than them. But no, everyone gets worked. I love getting worked.
Everyone's
Why would I not want to?
I miss it in a way. This is leaping a few steps. I want to transition into comedy down the line here, but this is what I love doing, just blathering my way through these conversations. Wrestling now, and you are still an active fan. I'm a classic fan, meaning I pay attention with the socials. I follow a lot of wrestlers. I don't sit down and watch it as much as I used to, but I love it as an art form. I really do think it is an art form of storytelling. But I am mixed on how people look at it. There's a news side to it, a legit, not the dirt sheet kind of approach that's been, you know, dominant in the industry for 40, 50 years and beyond. But like, it's legit, but then I almost feel like every surprise, like I would want to be worked. And it's hard. You can still do it, but I'd almost want to be worked.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I think a lot of the, there's so much people on the internet now, and it's all about getting that buzz.
Yeah.
Using Jade Cargill as one of the latest examples. WWE wanted you to know that ESPN's reporting Jade Cargill, and this reports Jade Cargill rather than her just showing up.
Yeah.
Her just showing up would be really cool. But and they were able to pull that off maybe a couple weeks before with The Rock. The Rock made a surprise appearance on SmackDown, and we didn't know what was going to happen. I went to go get dinner, and then I came back, because I'm always like, it's the first 10 minutes of SmackDown. Like, I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? The bloodline, blah, blah, blah. I was turning on. I'm like, what the fuck is The Rock doing in the middle of the ring?
Yeah, that's part of I'm trying to think the last time, again, I don't watch regularly, but last time I think I was legit like, whoa, it might have been the Hardys return at WrestleMania.
That was so good.
It was so good. And I know yeah. That's always the case. And I get the business side of it, exactly what you're describing. Like ESPN covering it in any way, shape, or form. And I know that level of coverage has changed over the years. But that's crazy to go back to a kid in the 80s and go, you know, imagine Chris Berman covering WrestleMania 7.
That would never happen. You cover the fact that they got in trouble or something. I forgot they got in trouble WrestleMania 7. They had to move venues.
Yes, yeah.
Sergeant Slaughter character was a problem.
Yeah.
Wild times.
The first time I saw wrestling really covered as actual news was the Vince McMahon trial in the early 90s.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing about Dark Side of the Ring, by the way, because it's always just like, Vince McMahon did this, that, and then they go on to other people. And then it's like The Simpsons. They're like, and we'll have plenty more on Vince McMahon. And Vince is like, God damn it. Leave me alone.
This spills over a little bit into comedy down the line. I don't know you on a deep personal level yet. We could still get there, but I'd call you a pretty principled and progressive person, at least in some of what the things you're trying to get out there in comedy. You have a lot of purpose to what you're saying a lot of times on stage. I've struggled recently too with wrestling, where I look back and I go, who the hell was I rooting for as a person? Can he separate art from the Ultimate Warrior? I try to, but you can't. Do you struggle with that at all on any level?
Yes, all the time. With that, with music, with everything.
Yeah.
I wish I could be one of those people who are just like, art from the artist, and just live my life. I'm almost envious of them.
Yeah.
I at certain moments stick out. Like Hulk Hogan, who I cannot stand. Mm-hmm. WrestleMania 2002. WrestleMania 18, when he and The Rock comes out, and that whole Toronto crowd just goes crazy for him.
Yeah.
And you gotta love it. Like, you gotta love that moment. Like, even if you don't like him, Undertaker wears a lot of 9-line shirts. You can take that how you want to take it. I'm just gonna put that there.
Yeah.
You can either be really into the military or elsewhere.
I
still cheer him. Like, it's hard to like not enjoy the Undertaker. So I guess it's really case by case. It's hard. It's just hard.
Yeah. It spills over into real life too. You know, as I've had a lot of my friendships affected over the years, and as things have changed dramatically, as I've changed. I was a small town conservative white kid from the suburbs, and I don't I'm far from that. I'm still a white kid from the suburbs, but I'm far from it. And I've struggled with it, and it's hard to separate. Yeah. There's moments I can't take the joy of Hogan at WrestleMania 9 challenging you, because I can't take that and put that on the shelf. But it definitely, it's for.
See, I never had joy there. Bret Hart.
Well, here's the thing. I was a Bret Hart guy. I hated that Hogan did that. But I was at my friend Joel's house dressed in a toga, all of us in togas, jumping up and screaming. So.
Well, if you're in the togas, you gotta.
You gotta. Yeah, and I don't mean to get so serious over that. I want to get back to some of the fun of wrestling, but. It's just I was actually watching one of your bits on Instagram. You have the great story of Hogan and racism, and just how a Hogan match. Imagine that the power of the Hogan comeback in the black community. And it's a powerful, poignant bit, but it's also just hilarious about the Hogan of it all too. So
yes, if we can survive a 20-minute beating, then if we can have 21, the power of Hulkamania. He starts shaking and he gets the fist. I think that would be perfect for us if it was plausible.
If
he doesn't want to give us the money that he's made.
Or, you know, maybe it's just a match we don't need to book in society, too. That's the thing, too.
That would be even
that'd
better.
That'd be good, right?
I don't think that's how they
not how the world's going. Yeah. It's just been, same with Vince. Like, I I'm okay with some of the complications. I don't know what you feel on that. Like, I think Vince McMahon is a genius who took one of the biggest risks in the world, pop culture, business-wise. And look where we are because of that. He destroyed the territories because I think he needed to. And I also contend Vern Gagne would have destroyed the territories. The Von Erichs would have destroyed anyone would have done it if they had the chance. He just did it. I don't take that away from him, but what the, especially the last couple of years, and then that mustache, I just, I am forever have separated the man from the myth, you know?
Yeah. I think there's certain things you can acknowledge that are like, this happened. I still appreciate that this happened. Sometimes I even feel joy that this happened, but this person is also not great. Like using music as an example, especially thanks to wrestling, there are some Marilyn Manson songs like The Beautiful People, The Fright Song, the WWF drilled into your brain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, these songs are so awesome. The human being, ooh.
Yeah.
And y'all can look that up. I'm not trying to slander him. Just ooh. So I can hear The Beautiful People and still vibe for a little bit, but I also know, like, I'm not going to go out and buy a new album. I'm not going to follow him on social media.
Yeah.
And just kind of a memory now.
Yeah, just kind of a memory now is a great way to look at it. And I'm all for, I mean, we are forever more exposed. That's just the way it is now. Social media, whatever you want to look at it. I'm okay with it. And it's a good thing, exposing a lot of the monsters. But even on your shirt, you have Vince, you have one of my all-time favorites, Roddy Piper. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got to know Rod a little bit working with him in comedy for one or two nights, but in wrestling, actually in a wrestling ring with him. And there was a guy who had a lot of complicated things in his past. A lot of things in the ring that probably would raise some eyebrows of things said and done. But at the end, there was someone who had seemed to pay a price for it and was trying to give back in a lot of different ways. And I think it's fair to learn both sides if that's the case. But I think a lot of other folks, they aren't doing what Piper was doing.
No, they aren't. I think and Piper as an example, like maybe other black people feel differently. I don't care about the fucking match. Like, I don't care about it. Where he has the half, like, was it good? Was it cool to do? No.
No.
But I don't, like, I don't think, like, it should be erased. I don't think that helps anybody.
Yeah.
It just removes some of these things. And not just Piper. I remember when a few years ago when people were trying to figure out what to do about Black Lives Matter, they were taking out so many episodes of just things where there's a racial joke. And some of these jokes were terrible. Cut the episode cut the scene if you need to, but they're cutting out entire episodes, trying to act like it doesn't exist. Like, I don't think that's how you do it, personally. I don't think that helps.
And your perspective on this is way more valuable than mine, but there's something to not just, hey, it was the times, but I think you need to analyze the times. Then why was that? And this is there, and it's going to stand out, and, you know, comedy changes and everything, but comedy, the war on comedy is a false flag operation anyways. There's never been a war on comedy. There's just people who don't want to adjust and change who feel as though they're being attacked. I don't need all the 30 Rock, It's Always Sunny Philadelphia edge pushing humor there, but I think it's okay to look at it and go, why? How did this happen?
Why?
Go ahead.
I think they just didn't want to have to explain themselves like every 10 years when a new generation is like, what the hell is this? And they're like, oh, not again. So I guess on that front. The one that pisses me off, there's two, and these are cartoons. Tom and Jerry, the best episode of Tom and Jerry is when Tom, Jerry, and the dog Spike all have a peace treaty and they're all working together.
Yes.
And then they all lose it over a steak and start fighting again. But there's one scene where a car goes by and oil splashes on them and they have blackface for whatever reason. They got the music though. No. Unnecessary.
Unnecessary.
Can easily be cut. Instead, they cut the entire episode from, like, you can't find it. I'm just like,
right.
No, just cut the scene. It's not that hard. I could do it on my phone if you really need that to happen.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, if we're cutting a 2 second lesbian kiss from Rise of Skywalker for the China market, I think we can, you know, cut something, a scene from the past easily.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But no, they just take that out completely. Another cartoon, this one was called Magical Maestro. Tax Savory, I believe, made it. And it's, you might have seen it. It's this dog who is like performing opera, and another dog has like a magic wand that makes them do like different things. No. It's very rare. They attack everybody. They attack Asia. They attack black people. They attack country people. They attack everybody.
Everybody.
It was like, and they would show that on TV, like no issues for a very long time. Now you can't. You can only find it in fragments on YouTube. But I guess not talking about that in description. That one should probably stay in the vault. But I personally enjoyed it. No matter, everybody caught strays. Let's put it as a case.
Well, yeah, sometimes satire, you know, maybe doesn't hold up over the years, but then yet we have, you know, you could probably get the entire F Troop, which has, you know, Italian Americans as Native Americans on screen or something like that. And that's there. That's on Nick at Night. It's okay. You know,
they're like, why not? I just want my old cartoons and racist.
My old racist cartoons back. That's a good spot. With comedy, I don't ever want to put words in anyone's mouth. And when I say that, you know, your comedy to me has some great purpose and poignancy behind it. Also, you have some just wonderfully silly things too, and you're very funny. One of the things I always love about your sets, because I see them usually about once a year or twice if you're out in San Diego, you're funny overall, but you've always got one or two little details that just get me so cracked up. Whether it's the white guys talking about, you know, bands they saw in concert, or this recent bit you have that I saw about white women in the office. I'll let people find that on the internet. It's hilarious. What drives your comedy in general? I know some nights it might be silliness, some nights it might be you got something you want to say. But how do you approach that? How'd you find your voice?
I don't. It's interesting. I go through just whatever's going on in my head and things that I want to say. Especially like when I first started, I was I was just trying to date a lot. So everything was, dating is crazy, Tinder's crazy. This is the date I went on. Swiping and all that.
Swiping's hard, you see.
I remember even the first time I did an open mic, someone did a Tinder joke, and I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? not realizing that, hey, this is going to be the fifth Tinder joke they heard today.
Across the board. Yeah. I had an eHarmony joke I gave up about 2007. Yeah. I'm with you.
You eventually stop it. But then I started I kind of got tired of talking about that. And I was just trying to think of just other topics and things just kind of going on in my life. And I'm a nerdy guy, so I never shy away from that. And if I can make that more universal, like I'm not going to break down the intricacies of an episode of Dragon Ball with you, but if I can make like a joke that everyone can get, or like Superman being black, if everyone can get, I'll do that. And more recently, I was talking, now not recent anymore, but you know, just the instance with Black Lives Matter and everything going on and the responses that I was getting from people, like as sad as everything was going on, it's kind of funny that like my fifth grade bully is like, hey man, I'm real sorry about everything. And I just want to help back. You're just like, no, you, what? Like, you don't have to tell me this or like apologize for saying the N word. Like, I don't. Okay. I got a lot of weird messages from people. And I was just like, some of these are hilarious.
Yeah.
You're awkward. And I'm watching racist cartoons. And you're coming to me.
I don't want to hear from you anymore. Let me live my life. That's bad.
So it just kind of. So things like that drive me. It sounds generic. I just want to be fun and funny. I just want you to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, but then that to me, in a roundabout way, again, not to put words in your mouth or answer for you, the fun and funny, the truth that comes out of your experiences, whether or not it's super, super intentional, like you're like, all right, tonight I've got to write this joke about what's going on with me in the Black Lives Matter movement. Here it comes. It just comes from your life. But then that speaks to a great confidence you found as a comic and as a voice on stage, I think. Was that a struggle at all early on? Speaking from my own experience in stand up, in and out for 20 years now, and I'm only recently just realizing here's who I want to be and here's who I think I am on stage. It took me a long time. And we all have our own journeys. Were you lost the Tinder moments? Were you lost? Was it just you trying to, I got to do what I think a comic does? And did it eventually click in, or was there a magic moment?
No, I think I was lost. I think because I started with a comedy class, and the comedy class teaches you to like not suck for 5 minutes. That's what I tell everyone. Like, because a lot of people want to go up and they'll just talk and they're done. And like, if I burp, I'm sorry. Because I was trying to get water before I started, And I couldn't, and I got Pepsi. So now I'm just gonna, it's probably just gonna keep happening.
It's all right. This is a raw and truthful, confident show now.
Exactly. You're gonna get a lot of Barney Gumble burps for a second. But it teaches you how to not suck. And, you know, after a few years, you just kind of feel stuck about, like, what do you want to say? Even though I do love the nerd stuff, some people look at me as just a nerd comic. I'm like, that's not true at all. Yeah. They're like, or a wrestling comic, because you got the wrestling jokes. Like, you do only nerdy things. I'm like, I mentioned Superman, who's a universal human being. Not human being, but universal character. I'm not about the deleted scenes on stage. Like, So, like, right now, I'm trying to not officially push away from that, but maybe, like, move forward. Like, I really like my current stuff now. The thing that just happened in a barbershop, and for people who haven't heard the joke, I was at my local barbershop, and they were cutting my hair, and then they saw a nice woman walk by, and they were like, hey, go talk to her. And I was like, I can't, I'm literally in the chair. And they were like, oh, so does that mean you like white women? And then everything explodes from there. So I kind of like that I can pull from those things and do a set maybe where you're not hearing like pop culture reference, multiple pop culture, which I do bring those out for Mark's shows, because Mark's fans are more pop culture friendly than a typical crowd.
And they still are, especially when we're down in San Diego, out in New York during that week for New York Comic Con. But you and I both have found, like, even this last round, just at the time of this recording a couple weeks ago, I think the first night you and I were both like, oh, it doesn't seem nerdy at all.
No, not at all. I was like, well, there go my doink jokes. You know, my Alf jokes. All these ones, I was like, oh, they're going to kill it tonight. Not this time, which is great for Mark, by the way. Like, he has developed an audience that's not just the wonderful audience that he had before and still does. He's got another audience that has found him. Or even people who are just going out to see comedy on a Friday night, and they're like, "Fuck yeah, we want to watch this guy." Like, that's great. Well, that's what we all want.
Yeah. There's this delicate balance of, you know, especially doing the shows with Mark, and you know, we appreciate an audience that's been brought in from the Schmodown, the Schmoes No Collider, Screen Junkie stuff that we've done. But Mark will even tell you, and I want to say this carefully so no one takes offense, but Mark will tell you, like, but the nights where I make strangers laugh are that much more important and that much more valuable to me. This last round in New York, it didn't feel like a total home game for us, and that was a good thing. It was kind of fun.
Yeah. So if anyone is listening, we do miss you, and you guys are awesome. guys are still awesome. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, trust
me. Don't want anyone getting upset.
Trust me. I did a Star Wars night of comedy on May 4th over here in Flappers in Burbank, and I was like, great. I got all my Star Wars, and I wrote some new Star Wars jokes, and I wrote that Star Wars book, and I'm going to put on a Star Wars shirt. And I get there, and half the crowd didn't even know what Star Wars was. They were just there for a night of comedy. And I felt so alone. So alone.
You're just like, well, let's strap in, guys. But that's also a good thing. At least you're talking about growth in comedy too. I think even a few years ago, if something like that happened to me, I would not be able to pivot. I'd be like, we're going to go through all these jokes for 10 minutes. And especially this year, between Jen Sturger, wonderful, her shows in San Diego, and even this round with Mark, once you learn that the audience may not be as nerdy as you think it was, at least for these themed shows, you're like, okay, cool. I can, you already in my head, I know where to go from A, B, C, D. When a few years ago, I'd be stuck on A, and I would not be able to get out of A, and you would just have to bomb.
Yeah, no, a few years ago, it would be, I'm holding, for those in the audio, I'm holding up a piece of paper, but I'd be looking at my set list going, this is it. This is all I got prepared to, this is what I memorized on the plane. And yeah, that ability to check down and find the open receiver is key. Or as Mark will sometimes tell me, hey, you threw an incomplete pass or an interception on that joke. You got the next play, and don't get in your head about it. So it's part of the growth as well. How long have you been doing stand-up now?
9 years, which feels unreal. It's been 9 years. I just started in 2014. I started with an improv class first. There were a lot of stand-ups in that class. I didn't finish. I didn't continue improv, because my second improv class was like, the guy was a level one instructor, but he treated it like level five. and he also looked like George Jetson, so I didn't take him seriously. But I swear I watch more than cartoons. I keep throwing out cartoons.
Yeah, these are some great deep cut rap. Well, George, I wouldn't call George Jetson deep cut, but I don't know, maybe for younger generations.
For younger, like the reason I was a kid, I was a cable kid, and when you get cable and Cartoon Network's brand new, that's all you watch. And yeah. I was just a cable kid that watched so much Cartoon Network as a child and Nickelodeon. So that's why I know who Huckleberry Hound is. Because there was nothing else on Cartoon Network at the time. There was no Toonami. There was none of that stuff. There was all their old Hanna-Barbera cartoons from the 60s.
That makes even more sense because I wasn't. Yeah, well, the moment you mentioned Tom and Jerry up top, I was like, wow. I haven't thought about Tom and Jerry in years, but it's part of your soul.
Yeah, that's all they would show. That's all they would show. But no, I super tangent. So the guy, he was a very strict level one guy, acting like a level five guy. Like if you zip, zap, zop,
yes.
You zop instead of zip, he'd be like, it's zop. Like he would get mad at you. He was that. I tell this bit, and it's not this terrible, but it was almost like this. He made us like describe how we were feeling or like talk about like how it feels to go like shopping or like something he did that weekend. And this woman who was in the class just broke up with her boyfriend. So she's like, this reminds me of me going shopping with my boyfriend. We just broke up. And she starts crying and she's breaking down. And then he's just like, I know you're hurting, but we have to start the scene. And it's just like, and everyone's like, what the fuck? Like
we're just doing yes and, man. We're just doing yes and.
Exactly. So now we're in a sad zoo. Like she's crying in the zoo. We got to work around it. Like what? One of the giraffes died in the zoo. She's tearing up. We got to work with it, I guess.
This guy's like the Megatron of improv teachers here.
Yeah, exactly. God, Transformers, they did not show in Cartoon Network. Not yet. But I do know them.
So what pushed you from improv to stand up? I too went from the improv sketch world to stand up, but what pushed you?
It was even before that. I was working a logging job where you're just like typing up things that are going on on a video. And it's very boring. But I was just.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had these thoughts of doing stand-up comedy in my head, like me on stage. I never have thoughts like that. I was like, I never even thought of doing stand-up comedy. I was like, why would I even do this? And the thoughts wouldn't go away. So when I did the class, there were stand-ups in the class, at least aspiring brand new stand-ups. Mm. And they were like, take this class because that's how you can start doing stand-up. And then I did my first show. You know, I did the class. The first thing they do in the class, they're like, all right, well, you're going to go up and perform. And I maybe have like scribbles of things that I think are funny.
Yeah.
But you're performing a 5-minute set day one. And really? I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. You just have to go with it. And thankfully my instructor, Karen, I'm going to butcher her last name, Karen Bergreen. I'm going to look it up real quick. I'm on my work account. I almost said the name of my job.
we'll keep your shoot job secret.
Yeah. Okay. My phone's not working. Well, Karen Bergreen, I believe, is how you say the last name.
Okay.
Yep. Karen Bergreen. So make sure I got it right. She was a wonderful instructor and still is a great comic, and she worked with all of us. I mean, us all seem better than we are. Yeah. But then it stuck with it. You know, it stuck with me. It stuck with a couple other people who are still doing it 9 years later. And I'm very happy I had those thoughts, because who knows where I would be if I did it.
That's great. Yeah, without those thoughts, you'd still be stuffing data into charts, it seems, documenting.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. Ugh. I didn't take a stand-up class. I did the other improv, and everything came up with Groundlings and all that stuff. But I sometimes wish I did. I think stand-up classes, comedy classes, can be, I don't know, there could be a stigma. There's definitely some bad teachers out there. Definitely people, like anything. Not a shock, but like I think sometimes people look down on them. You're not teaching someone to be funny. You're already hearing the voices in your head. But it is. I think it's a structure builder that I sometimes think I miss in my performances.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It felt like a structure builder. Mm-hmm. You had a set and you worked through those sets for like 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then you also had the booker being like, you don't have enough people.
Yeah.
Very scary to deal with. Yeah. But that's what this class does. It teaches you, if you have a bunch of jokes to where you're like, all right, well, I went on a date and then I had a pie and then I had a sandwich and I also went on the bus. And you're just like, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. They tell you like, all right, well, maybe it's the pie. You drop the pie on the girl during the date. That's why you have to take the bus, you know, and they teach you how to form that story. And that's what I really liked about it.
Yeah. No, that's great. You know, it's that kind of thing. And how to just, you know, punch, you know, set up punchline, all that. Yeah. I get that. But like, yeah, how to approach it. And then just one of my old friends who is still doing comedy. We don't really communicate much anymore because the lockdown turned him into an alt-right Nazi, but maybe uncovered what was already there is the right way to say that versus turned into. Mm. But he was a good comedy coach for a long time, and I would hear some of his lessons, and there was a lot of like, well, who are you? You're a mother. You're a niece. You're a this. You're a that. You're an office manager. What are you? And that's where a lot of humor comes from too. And
yeah.
I go back to those kind of basics when I'm struggling or looking for something new.
I can feel that too, because that's something I'm like, because I'm getting older and I'm in my 30s, you know, later 30s, getting there. Mm. Sorry if that sounds
depressing,
weird, but like one of my best friends now has a kid. A lot of my other really good friends have kids. They're in that mode right now, and I'm like still watching Dragon Ball. I need to I'm like, where do I go? How do I talk about this? How do I focus that? I did have a joke. I did get a joke out of it about unsolicited baby photos, because I was getting that from one of my friends who was so happy to be a parent. And I'm happy for them. But don't send me your kid in spaghetti at 10 p.m. unprompted. I didn't ask for this.
Yeah.
Like, don't send me this photo of your child in the tub. Like, first of all, I don't need that on my phone in any capacity. Please tell me it's happening. Please. Like, how's your kid doing? He's doing great. Here you go. It would just be me watching TV, and then I get a text, and it's a baby in a tub. I'm like,
don't.
Please don't do that without telling me this is coming.
Please put some description on there that
exactly. Put the alt text. Let me know.
What's that?
Like, you don't know where I'm going to be right now, and then I got to explain.
Yeah.
I have this baby.
This makes me think of those normal, quote unquote, normal things, which are perfectly acceptable for those who want them and seek them out and have them. But do you the marriage, kids, house? This isn't. I don't need to know all your details on this, but it seems like you're happy. The struggles are always real for us comics and anyone as an artist trying to put stuff out there. But it seems like you like your position. You like this path, whether or not the end is clear. You like what you're on. Yeah.
Yeah, I like what I'm on, and I think that's kind of a reason why I'm single right now.
Well, you just swipe, you see.
Not that you can't have a nice girl. Yeah, I got to swipe. I got to swipe and come up with these dates and fuck white women in the office, apparently. But I'm not even cool enough to do that if that was a possible. I would be so nervous that a camera would be on. I would not be able to perform. I know myself.
I'd be like,
oh, God, the camera's on. Security guard's gonna walk by. Like, I know my brain. Like, it would just be.
Look, man, I did 17 years in the public safety business, 12 years as a security director. I can tell you, if you think people aren't watching in a mall parking lot, they're watching.
See?
They're watching.
And I'm not an exhibitionist. That does not get me off.
Yeah, that might be the thing, but yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. not mine. Mm-hmm. But fine. Well, that's
fair. I asked you the big
question. Yeah, Marcy, look at me avoiding it.
Yeah.
No, I, of course, one day
Sure.
Children, my thing on children right now is I would like some, I would obviously someday,
yeah.
But maybe it's just the world and the things I see in the world. Like, I'm scared to bring a fucking child in.
Yeah.
Not that, which is schools and guns and all this other fucking craziness.
Yeah.
I'm genuinely like would be afraid to do that. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, trust me, I'm not even there yet. There's nobody in my DMs who's like, let's make babies. And maybe if that actually happened, my brain would be different. I'd be more ready. Sure. But just the thought of it right now, I'm just like, I'm scared for them. I don't want that. That's not what I'm thinking about.
You're not hearing those voices. You're still hearing the comedy.
No, yeah. Yeah, I'm still hearing the comedy voices. Exactly. The voices were babies. That's my grandmother being like, make babies. That's not me. I'm just like, oh, man, yeah. I got to find that Tom and Jerry episode.
Why did they remove that? Have you always been East Coast?
Meeting Turner.
Yeah.
Yeah, always been East Coast. Did college in Connecticut, which was interesting for a bit.
Yeah.
It's almost like pre-gentrification because it was Hartford and part of it was really nice. And then the next part was like The Wire. And you're like, what happened? I went down a block.
I just wanted to watch a Hartford Whalers game. Now I'm here.
Yeah. Exactly. Now I don't have a car. How did this happen? But I met a lot of wonderful people in Hartford. I joined the fraternity, which a fraternity that doesn't haze, which is nice because I don't want to put thumbs up butts and whatever the hazing fraternities do.
Yeah, broomsticks belong on brooms. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That should just be the motto of the non-hazing fraternity.
That should be life. That's a life motto.
I know. Exactly. I'm also going to pitch that next time I see them. Next meeting of the alumni. New slogan, broomsticks belong on broom. Right? Turn in your number. It's time. But yeah, I did that. And that's really just mostly East Coast. I've thought about moving to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would mind it. I like enjoy, like unlike a lot of comics, I enjoy my time when I'm in LA, even though I don't do that much. I have a lot of good friends out in LA, but I'm also very, very New York and I also so I'd have to change some things about me if I ever want to make that move.
Yeah.
But I am very, very New York.
A good car for one. Yeah.
Yes, I would need that. Or I'd spend a lot of money on Uber.
Is there the only real time I've spent in New York comedy is at the New York Comedy Club with the Ellison Show. And I was bummed. We left a day early than we normally do. I would have happily attended your Comedy Select show, which those on the East Coast in the New York area. Kyle's got a great show.
Comedy, I would have been on it.
Character Select. Sorry, I said Comedy Select. Character Select. Would have loved to. So we're going to aim for that maybe next year. But I understand the big overall general differences between the two coasts for decades in terms of comedy, but is that a real thing? Do you feel the differences?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think I embrace LA comedy as much. I mean, because when I go, I'm usually there around Comic-Con and then, especially now more recently than before, if I go 4 days at a con, like I'm like, maybe let me not see anybody because I was around a bunch of people.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go and run just start like on everyone and get everyone sick. But even before then, I have friends who are, I don't want to be the person who goes to a friend's house and is like, all right, well, I'm doing 8 different things. I'll only see you for bed. Like I need to make like a trip. Although when I have done comedy in LA, it has been nice. I know I've heard it's a little more scattered. Like New York, a lot of people are very into doing like 4, 3, 4, 5 mics even a night. I don't. That's a lot of waiting. That's a lot of waiting for nothing. Unless you really have something you want to say and work on, you can get in and out. But if you're the last guy at the mic every single time, like your whole day.
What are you doing?
But New York, you can really hit 4 or 5 shows, especially if you're at that level. I'll shout out Jared Waters, who's a comedian in New York, who like even I think someone even documented it. I think he did 7 shows one day on a Saturday, 7 spots. I'll say 7 spots.
Yeah,
and you know he's going from the city, the Queens, the different parts of New York, and he's able to do this. I won't say with ease, but he makes it look effortless, and he's a very funny comedian. Like that's something that you like strive for yourself.
Yeah.
Maybe not 7. I mean, if someone wants to give me 7, sure.
Sure.
But I'll gladly do it.
It seems,
you can definitely do that more in New York where you're like instead of how we would watch the show, we'd watch Mark's show.
Yeah.
New York, it's like, all right, I did my spot. Now I'm going to go over to the stand and do that spot. I'm going to go over to just this random bar show and do that spot. Like that, you can do that a lot, very easily.
It seems, yeah. And it seems when that happens out there, this is, again, from my perspective, which is a very sweeping general one, it seems more of a legit choice as a working comic. I got two or three spots I'm going to run around town versus sometimes in LA, like some of the big names. I mean, you know, you do the Comedy Store, Improv, Laugh Factory. That's the course if you're at that level. But there's some people that come running into Flappers in a Yoohoo Room show where we got about 8 paid audience members, and they tell the booker or the guy running the show, I need to go first. I got another set. It's like, you don't. It doesn't matter.
I hear it all the time in New York. You have to, especially with the character selection, I have to accommodate for that. And most of the time, I think it works.
Yeah.
I think my wrestling fan brain helps me build my lineups too. Cause I'm like, well,
oh yeah,
I want to make sure it starts this way and builds and builds and builds and builds.
Yeah.
And God forbid somebody bombs, which does happen, sometimes, or someone doesn't hit as strong. I'm like, well, I know I have, John Cena versus Undertaker after this, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If the Divas match didn't do well. And that's not a slight at the women comedians. Women comedians are great.
Yeah.
I just wanted to use the wrestling example.
Yes, yes.
For that, yeah. So
yep. No, you're good.
But sometimes that also messes with your plan, because a comic that you're like, all right, I'm going to this person the headline. They're like, I have to go first because I have 4 more other spots. And you're like, shit, all right. So now we got to
juggle
play out with it again, and thankfully more times than not it works out.
I've booked and co-ran a wrestling company for years and have been around comedy enough to know that they are pretty much the same worlds. And
yes,
sometimes a wrestler will lock himself in the bathroom because he doesn't want to lose a match, and you have to readjust because he refuses to come out. Sometimes comics will do that too.
I would love to have a comic lock themselves in the bathroom because they don't want to do 7 minutes. They want to do longer.
It was a true story. And it wasn't even the same match. It was a wrestler I managed, and he was supposed to do a run-in, much like Papa Shango at WrestleMania 8. But later in the night, he was booked in a title match, but he was booked to lose. He was the challenger, and he was going to lose. And he didn't like that. And so for this spot, he said he had to go to the bathroom, and he literally locked himself in a stall, and we're out there waiting for where is he? And you know, I was the manager, so I had to end up doing the interference, the DQ bit. But it's like, it just, and this is in a boys and girls club in Simi Valley for 30 paid.
God.
You know, it's yeah. Like, this isn't the sportatorium in Dallas. This isn't the Coliseum.
You're not getting the Montreal screw job right now. Yeah, you are exactly. Doing the show, and get out there and take that out. Like, what are you doing?
Ego knows no boundaries, as I think. No. It strikes when it strikes.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, but ego is also something you got to keep in check with comedy too. Like, I mean,
yeah.
You can have a great string of shows, or you can feel, especially New York, you can feel like you're here from just one night, and then something could happen. Or even the power of social media. You're like, oh man, I did great. And then you're like, so if you had a friend, it's like, I just got past it to sell her. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Yes, I got to keep climbing. So like, don't, you can't stay too into what's going on.
Yes.
Can't stay too into yourself.
Yeah,
I grab myself when I said that.
No, that's great. That's a great path to take on the conversation about feeling that you belong in a good, healthy way. In both ways, you know, yes, ego out of control, that's something you want to be wary of. But also what I suffer more often than not is my ego attacks me and drags me down to where I'm like, I don't belong here. I shouldn't have even flown to New York with Mark. I shouldn't be on this stage. 2 years ago, there was a comic that did a drop-in who's someone who's doing very good, very funny comic, but I think he's one of those comics that says things that are designed to push and ignite and hurt people. But I felt I was like, I shouldn't be here. He's going to call me out and there's a fake comic and my brain goes that way. So there's a balance to find. I spoke of your confidence earlier, but I know you probably have to find that balance too of especially
absolutely.
In New York where you're hit. There's so many great comics out there.
Yeah, no, you feel it a lot. Or even when I have somebody on the show, I'm just like, oh, he's real. He's way better,
right.
You know, it's not better might be the wrong term, but you're just like,
yeah,
when you see something click with somebody like just so well, when you're like, and you're feeling like that, you're like, oh no, I got way more to go. But I also feel that way too. Like sometimes I feel like I don't belong. I'm more of an introverted person, and comedy can be a very extroverted business.
Yeah.
Even though there are a lot of introverts here, you know, you go to parties or you see other people, and people are just can vibe so much easier, or even in a green room with people you don't know that well. Some people can walk in and steal the room, and they could make everyone feel welcome. Vince Chang is one of those guys. Vince who is the host usually for Mark Ellis's shows. He will light up a room and make everybody feel special. And me, I will hide in the corner like Golem and only talk to you if you talk to me. But sometimes, you know, it takes a lot for me to feel that way. And I think you should feel that way. You also improve every time I see you.
Oh, thanks, man.
So I think you're awesome. I mean, you dropped an album, which a lot of comics have not done, or, you know, that's a big step. That's a big feat.
Yeah, no, it took 20 years to convince myself I wasn't a piece of shit to do it. Yeah, it's but also didn't have a good set recorded. No, and I appreciate it. I take the compliment of you know, I left comedy a few times. I always joke about my retirements. I left in 07. I left in 2010. And I came back in 09, and I felt I had improved. Left again. Then Mark Ellis did try to bring me back in the nicest ways. He didn't demand. He didn't trick. He said, when it's right, I think you should do it. When it's right, I think you should do it. He did. And I had a 10-minute set at La Jolla Comedy Store in 2015 during San Diego Comic-Con, like the first night. And the first 5 minutes were some of the worst things I've ever experienced that I forgot that the last 5 minutes were good. And I think, and he will always tell me, you wanted the first 5 minutes. Yeah. You threw some incomplete passes. I was like, well, the game was lost. It was snowed out. But it's amazing how the mind remembers those first five and not the last five.
Oh my God. Yeah. I'll always remember. Like I got to remind myself where I watch something back. Like, oh, this isn't as bad. Even some of the, like, well, I had a great time at New York Comedy Club. I was just like something. Mm-hmm. I think because we were just not used to the fans. I was like, did I do bad? And then, you know, even your friends that Saturday, I was at New York Comic Con. They came up to me while I was working with my friend, and they were like, "This is the guy. My friends can't stop talking about you.
Wow,
you did such a great job." And then like, I feel awesome again. It's wild how self esteem and ego can really mess with you.
Yeah,
but it really was, it can really, our brains really trick us to focus on so much negative stuff. And I mean, even the stuff around us, not trying to sound like super thing about it. You know, I mean, we strive off negativity with the fandoms, Star Wars, wrestling, all that stuff. It's very like, this sucks. Rose Tico sucks. John Cena sucks. Like, you know, and people drive off that negativity and not just things that we consume, but in our own minds and lives. And we really got to be kinder to ourselves. We really do.
Yeah. The previous guest on the show, pro wrestler, Adam Knight, Outlaw Adam Knight, like that's something that he and I will even text over. He's like, you know, hey, you're not being kind to yourself. I see it. I hear it. And it's something to work for. Yeah. And negativity drives. And I used to write, for a short while, I wrote for WrestleZone.com. Which I think is still going, but I wrote in about 2010. Yeah. I wrote a weekly column for them, and I made sure
you read it.
You probably did. I made sure I had power rankings, all this fun stuff, but it was never designed to tear down what I saw. I didn't love every second of Raw or SmackDown or TNA back then. I was covering all because I liked the 2010 TNA product, but yeah, I tried to be positive, and it was amazing how it just didn't click with the audience.
Yeah, no, people look for a place to bitch sometimes, especially the forums, the comment section. So when you do get something, or you're able to make something that is positive, and you get like a big positive reaction, it feels even better. Because before my wrestling experience, before everything else later, was my brother and I, we made a site called Three Man Booth. And the goal was to be the fun page. The fun page, like the worst we got was tearing down during a live coverage of Raw, where like we'd take good tweets and bad tweets, and the bad tweets would be like, Eva Marie sucked. It wouldn't be like, Eva Marie should go in a fire
to die.
All these other things. And we would make fun memes and like just kind of things like that. And we really enjoy trying to bring that positive spin to pro wrestling and pro wrestling fans. And thankfully, we had people who rocked with us for a few years until we took our break. But I think there's really something about being positive and hopefully finding that fan base that wants to be positive with you, because it's so easy. You can look at YouTube videos now where there's just like the problem with this, and they have the most, and there's no fucking problem with it. They just need to talk about something.
Yeah.
Like it's so easy to be a piece of shit. No, don't be negative. Some people could be nice people putting on an act, but some people could be pieces of shit.
No. My listeners, my followers know it. It's like, there's two things I'm trying to work on in my life is, you know, be positive about myself, be kind to myself, but also, you know, show up for the people that show up for you. And that speaks to what you're saying about the audience, like three-man booth, which I kind of vaguely think I recall seeing something about that out there in the wrestling world. So maybe our paths crossed unintentionally a few years ago.
You were just met. See, we have the thoughts. Yeah. I was thinking of you this whole time, like the comedy talk.
Well, let's also not overlook the fact that we both have the same gray denim jacket and jean jacket.
It's in my other room.
I know you wear it often, and I wore it 2 years ago, I think. Got some great photos outside the club, but I didn't bring it this year because I was like, you know what? That is, it in terms of pro wrestling, that's Kyle's gimmick, and I'm not stepping on his gimmick in this region. I'm not doing
it. Maybe I shouldn't bring it in LA. I should wear a different jacket. Look, I'm not in the most perfect shape. I call it the love handle jacket. It does a great job of making me look way slimmer than I am.
I love it. In New York this last time I had two new baseball tees. The pink sleeve one, which was directly inspired by Christian in the picture with him and Edge and others. I literally saw that picture and was like, I'm going to order that. I'm going to track that down on the internet. And I did.
That's awesome.
I did not have a chance to work out and eat less as much as I liked. So my entire set in New York, I was just trying to hold my belt and just like, do I keep pulling my shirt down or not? I didn't feel comfortable. I missed my jacket. So I feel you.
I'm so sorry. No, I am the same way right now. I got to get into much better shape. Food is good. I live up the block from a Popeyes. That is hard. And a Dunkin' Donuts.
You live in a city. We don't need to dox you where your address is or your borough, but you live in a city in a general giant metropolitan area that I go to intentionally eat bad in. I don't know how you do it.
I mean, when I go to LA, I don't know how you feel about In-N-Out versus other places, but my friend loves In-N-Out. I love In-N-Out.
My hot take is
burger.
My hot take is I'm not a huge In-N-Out fan. However, if you put it in my hand, I'm going to eat it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We get it with the animal style fries, like everything he knows what to do. We may have a little bit of things that used to be legal. I mean, that are legal in LA and now are legal everywhere else.
Yes.
And it's like the best fucking sandwich I've had. If I was there every day, I would not like it as much. But
I mean,
I feel like that's every vacation spot, though. Sorry to cut you off.
No, you're absolutely right.
You don't go to Italy for salad, you know, you go to eat and have a good time.
That's food. They, years ago when Chipotle was just like, they had like three locations in LA and I would have to drive like almost half hour to get to the nearest one. And I would tell friends about it. There's this place called Chipotle. Oh, you can get, and then they literally popped up everywhere. McDonald's, of course, was behind him. And at my work location, they put one. And I kept telling everyone, when that opens up, I'm eating there every day. I ate there once in like 5 years.
what stopped it? It's like, it's too much.
I went there once and I was like, I've looked out to the world and there's nothing more I can conquer here. I've had it. We're good.
Fair. You're sitting there like Thanos sitting there.
At the end of overstuffed, less, not enough meat burrito going, burrito. I'm good.
That's my favorite thing about at least this is the different movie, Endgame, that like they beat him up while he was cooking. I think that's the funniest fucking thing.
Just a man who was
just like, oh, hey, guys. God.
It's
so funny.
It's that and you know, Viggo Mortensen fighting naked in Eastern Promises. Those are the two most vulnerable fight scenes in cinema.
Yeah, it's so vulnerable. I thought you were going to talk about the broken toe, which is like a fact that every man knows and has to tell everybody every 5 minutes.
Do you know? Yeah, I think we, yeah, and there's also that with wrestling too. In the time we have remaining, there's two big areas of what I want to close with some wrestling talk. I know you know it, know it well, but some final stuff about comedy and where you're at with it right now. And I mentioned earlier, like this thought of the war on comedy and in these woke times with cancel culture run amok. And, and I'm okay with boundaries being pushed. I'm okay with, you know, if you have thoughts and things to say, I think comedy and comedy clubs should be a place of expression, and I'm never there, but without a doubt, and New York is full of a lot of them, as is LA. There's a lot of comics, I think, that are just up there to hurt, whether intentional or not. You are not one of those, and you say some pretty truthful, direct things. I don't want to pin you down. I don't want to call out any colleagues. I'm not into that too. We're all on our own journey. But how do you approach that? How do you think that all that's going on right now? And is comedy safe for you, Kyle?
In New York, at least. I'm not going to probably do comedy in Alabama and be like, hey, well, guys, Black Lives Matter.
No, that's true.
Yeah. I'm kidding. I don't know how. Maybe you're the people in Alabama will rock with it. Some of them.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think one of the early lessons I learned this in the improv class, actually, was that like comedy, people can tell when it's from a place of hate. When you're on stage or when you're performing something, you can tell when it's from a place of hate, usually.
Yeah,
might have changed now in the past 10 years, but they can tell. And like, just that was one of the lessons I always took with me, to try to never have it come from a place of hate and to just make sure it's funny, you know?
Yeah.
There's definitely some jokes. You'll see a comedy special and the comic may push boundaries, but it's funny. It's not like offensive funny. It's like funny. And then there are other ones where you see where you're just like, okay, they just want to hate on a particular group of people. And you can tell that from what's being said, or they're doubling down on the social media outrage, which I do feel is a thing. A quick tangent on that. I feel like now with the comedy specials, they're just people on social media ready to rip the entire thing apart and review it like it's a A24 film. It's not. It's a comedy. It's a comedy special. It's supposed to be a comedy special. It's supposed to be treated like one.
Yeah.
But I think some people, and not just with comedy, but with everything, just kind of live, again, about the negativity, live for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, is it safe? I want to say right now, yes. I try not to, I'll make jokes. I'll try not to really, again, hurt anybody. It's never my goal. I think it's funny. It's certain parts of, also what I consider safe, maybe certain parts of Brooklyn. Brooklyn's a weird place to do comedy.
Really?
Might not. I think some of the more liberal places, well, I, again, don't try and go hard with my boundaries.
Yeah.
They tighten up over things that you'd be surprised that they tighten up over.
Mm.
So I just think, I think it's safe. I'll just say, I think it's safe for me.
I agree with you in a major way. But also, I really thought that's a real insightful point of audiences can tell when it's from a point of hate, or at least you hope they can tell. Because a lot of those hateful comics and podcasters certainly have a lot of fans. But that might speak to what's going on in their hearts too. Yeah, and that's, I think my biggest gripe with it right now is, like I said, I have some things in, old jokes, never done from a place of hate, but I don't use them anymore. Just the topic, the approach, the perspective is not needed. I've changed my view on what my comedy is about. But I don't know. I'm in the spot where I see a lot of comics where I'm like, I think you're fighting for the right to say words. And then you think a lot of the greats like the Carlins and the Pryors and the Bruces were fighting for the right to say words. They weren't. They were fighting against oppressive regimes and oppressive societies.
It goes right over their heads.
Yeah.
It goes.
Yeah. And that's my big spot. Not to get too serious, but I just scared, cause I've watched you navigate now. I mean, we've been doing the Ellis shows out there with you 3-4 years running, plus the San Diego ones. So I've seen you a handful of times now. I just respect the way you approach it, because you deal with stuff that's from your life. We talked about your truth and your confidence earlier, but you do it in a way where you find the humor in it, and I think it's admirable in these troubled times.
a lot of troubled times out there.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. But before we leave, pro wrestling. I want to know your favorite wrestlers of all time, current days, whatever, and what draws you back to this wild, crazy, and at times problematic industry, but a great art form.
They have all been canceled. No, I will say, even in the problematic column, I will put The Undertaker.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's still The Undertaker.
He's still The Undertaker.
He showed up a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I heard the gong on NXT. I'm like, you know, he's still the guy. So he's still up there. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Daniel Bryan / Bryan Danielson, whatever you want to call him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his real name is Bryan Danielson.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Orange Cassidy, I think, is really great in AEW.
I need to explore him more because I don't watch, again, like I keep saying, don't watch a lot of it more, but his so is his gimmick that he's kind of unaffected and lazy and over it? Was that
like he kind of has that like slavish, but like kind of like, I don't care gimmick, but like he also is a really good wrestler. Like,
yeah.
And that's all, especially if you've been watching the past 4 years, you've seen that evolve. From like he still has that laid back attitude, but he's still really, really like he's just he still wants to win. He's not gonna sit there and lose because he doesn't feel like it.
Yeah,
he wants to win. And they actually did AEW storytelling doesn't always get the best love.
Yeah,
but they actually did a storyline over the past year where he was the international champion. And he was the international champion for almost a year. And it was always title defense after title defense after title defense. And they just kept getting harder and harder and harder to the point where, like, he lost to Jon Moxley. And people were like, oh, poor Orange. And now his quest was to get that title back, which he got back because of just storylines had to change. Yeah. And his whole demeanor about it is even changing. Almost not heelish, but almost like now he really, really wants this. And he's going to beat the shit out of anyone who wants to take it from him. I want to keep going. I want to mention some women: Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, Trish Stratus. I don't have as much time to even watch this stuff, but Stardom, Mina Shirakara is like the Japanese woman who like I'm enamored with, not just because she's beautiful, but she's kind of like a diva, like almost like a throwback to the diva era.
Yeah,
like she used to be an idol, a Japanese idol.
Oh,
and she kind of like, or like a model, I think, and she became a wrestler. And she does this entrance where she does the whole choreography number, which I'm like, what comes while a fake version of Danze Kunduro, that song plays, which is funny to me. I really like her. And one more Joshi Japanese person, Maki Ito. I don't know if you ever seen
that. I haven't, no.
Where she was a fired idol and she legit comes out and sings her song before her match. And she does a lot of hardcore matches and like speaks in broken English, where she's like, fuck you, motherfucker, and things like that. I'll have to send you some clips.
Please.
But I can go on and on and on.
No, no, it's great. No, you're steeped in it. And some great names. Bret Hart, Michaels were transformative for me, where it's like, you know, I remember looking at them as the small guys, right? The IC title guys, and to watch the business change because it had to. Yeah, I think, you know, Undertaker and, I don't need to sit down and talk about his voting record with him, but I have more problem with Kane, Glenn Jacob right now.
Oh my God. Actually, I don't even want to get into that.
He's actually
that's a whole
power.
Hour.
Undertaker just seems like a guy who's like, you know where I stand. You want to get a beer? Like I can maybe have a thing of that, but yeah, no Taker. But I'm glad you brought up the women in wrestling because, I think it was beyond time, but there was always great wrestling going on. We just weren't being allowed to see it for years. I'm a big fan of it. And Trish Stratus is who she is, but she morphed into just an amazing character. And her comeback is on a Hall of Fame level, on par with The Rock's comeback, on par with Cena. And I'm glad you brought it up. I think it's important.
No, I agree with all of that. And she's still, I mean, up even to this year, some fans may not have loved everything about it. She came back and she wrestled she was almost like a full-time schedule.
Right.
Which is a testament also to some of these wrestlers like Trish Stratus, Edge, Christian, who are still doing this now.
Right.
And people aren't like still, like when you watch, like, sorry to say his name, Hacksaw Jim Duggan at a gym or Tito Santana at a local match. And you're like, still? Like, I mean, the shape that they're in.
Trust me. We at MPW and we booked the barber. That's all I'll say. We booked the barber.
Oh, boy.
And he started drinking about 2 p.m. for a 7 p.m. show. And when he had those scissors out for the hair match we had that night, it was It wasn't WrestleMania 2. I'll just say that.
You see, yeah, exactly. And it's, I mean, that's a testament to their time, and hopefully they're all doing well.
And, by the way, sweetheart, but, he wasn't an a-hole. He was jovial. He was good, and he did what he was there to do. But it was, you're just like, oh boy. So yeah, anyways, to your point, yeah, Trish is like the same age as me, and you know, a mother and doing yoga and leaping across the rings.
How do you look better now than you did 20 absolutely. Years ago? I'm just like, oh my God. I'm just like, oh, I gotta get in shape, wrestlers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, Trisha's transformation, she's obviously always a beauty, but it's a whole beauty now. It's just this whole person doing this amazing thing in and out of the ring that I think's what's showing. It's one of my favorite stories in wrestling overall, just her comeback.
No, I agree. Again, I could name a million people. Mm-hmm. Asuka, Lita, The Rock. Lita. I could go on. I'm not gonna... I was like, let me name some more black people.
John
Cena. I was a big John Cena guy. Yeah. Even as a grown man, I really like John Cena.
You know, big match John, man. Five-star John. I'm telling you, I am a punk fan to a point. I think he is spectacular, and I think his heart and intentions and point of view of the world are in the right spots. He carries a lot of things going on inside that brain. And I think not all of them are make his actions justified. But beyond that, that Chicago match, what was that, 2011?
Oh my God.
That was the most amazing things to experience. And that is punk, but that was John Cena carrying a lot of that and knowing what role to play. I think he's absolutely a legend.
That one and the Rob Van Dam. I was at the Rob Van Dam John Cena match.
Really?
Yeah, I got to go, and that crowd they don't do it on Justice from TV. They don't. Mm. Although my favorite thing about that show, besides that match, was the Sandman making his debut, because the year before he came out to Enter Sandman,
right?
And it was awesome, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to sing it this year. And then stupid Pepsi, and then next year he comes out to the knockoff. And I don't think it came across on TV, but the crowd starts chanting, "That song sucks. That song sucks. That song sucks."
It's almost like he had he had to get like I do for most of my shows, a generic licensed podcast theme, because it's all he could.
Yes, exactly. I still remember I had a brief podcast called Anything But Generic a couple of years ago, and I didn't want to try and get in trouble with music. So
yeah.
We got this one, I think Kevin McLeod, who does a lot of
Kevin McLeod.
And it just goes down. So it's in my head, because I had to edit it. I embedded it in my head. I'm hanging out with the people I hosted it with, if they start talking about something that sounds like podcast material, I'll just start going. You just remember these.
Yeah, there's some good ones out there. I like the ones I have, including the ones for this show. Well, it's amazing. And no, I love your love of wrestling. I speak about the world in terms of wrestling a lot. So I understand your language there. And I love it. We could talk some more wrestling some other time, but I don't want to keep it. I told you about 45 minutes, and we're going a lot longer than that. So I want to get you out to that Popeye's chicken.
Yeah, I hope you guys are all listening.
They are. They are.
Let's close on something else. I don't want you to be like, all right, black guy, I want you to go on back and eat your Popeye's chicken. It's my fault. I brought it up first. But
No.
It's just kind of a funny sentence. I actually have, because I do like Popeye.
Yeah.
But I have a friend who blessed them. She knows I like Popeye. So she'll send me different Popeye's locations. This white girl. And I'm just like, don't. I don't know how to tell you to not do this, because it just sounds, it just makes me seem like, oh, look, like I really like, which I'm not at all. It's just good food. Like she was in another country. She's like, look, they have Popeyes here.
There you go.
Well, I would hope.
There you go.
Love her. I love her so much.
Just some good food. I really appreciate you coming on, my friend. It's been great to get to know you over the years and just watch your work. You're one of my favorites out there. I think you're doing some great work. And yeah, come out to LA some more and let's hang. Before we get out of here, I want to put you over and tell them where they can find and follow you and anything you want to highlight. Now's your time. Put yourself over, my friend.
All right. Thank you. And I feel the same about you. You are awesome.
Thank you, man.
Very funny, and need to go out to LA.
Come hang. I'll tell you what, I'll break my In-N-Out self band. We'll go to In-N-Out.
Let's do it. I'll find some time. You can find me everywhere. Keep it 5-star, FIVESTAR on all socials. If you're in New York, Character Select Comedy is at the Stand, especially November 4th. We are in the New York Comedy Festival, which is was a big goal for me this year. And I'm very happy to be in the festival. So we have a big show planned. So please come to this show. Tickets are available at the Stand and my Instagram website. I mean, on the Instagram links. Would love to see you guys there. If you're a fan of the show, tell me that you heard the podcast.
Yeah.
And do all that. But no, it's going to be a great show. And if not, then we're there every month. So
yeah.
Until they say no. Hopefully they won't. Very happy to be here.
No, great stuff. Yeah, if you're listening, check them out and tell them Ken sent you. Yeah, head on down to Kyle's show. Tell him Ken sent you. I appreciate it. For those listening and supporting on Patreon, thank you very much. You get this episode early and ad-free. If you want to consider supporting, go to patreon.com/KenNapsuck. Of course, my special In My Day is out, available on Bandcamp. That's the special edition of the album. And then coming soon, that's right, I co-wrote some songs with some two wonderful musicians. That's right, I'm getting into the rock and roll game. The band The Moon Angels. We've got our first single coming out November 3rd, available on Bandcamp and all the other spots as well. That's it, folks. We'll see you soon. Bye.